good morning or good evening, everyone. Welcome to Animates. As you know, we cover all creatures great and small on this program, and today we are talking about a wonderful, quite small creature that is of great benefit to us through enabling the pollinating of our fruit trees and vegetables, as well as providing us with a delicious and health-giving product, honey. And of course, we are talking bees and keeping bees in our urban environment. With an interesting fact about bees. Without the pollination services that bees provide us, our tables would begin to look very bare. Bees are responsible for 1/3 of the food we eat. In Australia, around 2/3 of European introduced horticultural and agricultural crops are entirely dependent on bees. Now that's an interesting fact. Vicky Brown with us today, and Vicky is from the Urban Beehive and knows all about beekeeping, and we're going to have a chat about keeping bees, particularly in the urban environment. And I'd like to welcome you very much, Vicky, to 2RPH.
Thank you, Fran. It's lovely to be here.
Oh, Vicky, I've got lots of questions for you. The first one is, why keep bees?
That's a great question. A lot of people are wanting to keep bees these days because they've got beautiful gardens and they're saying that there's no bees in them anymore, especially if they're planting fruits and vegetables and they want them to be pollinated. It's also good to keep bees because you're helping the local environment. Bees don't just pollinate your plants, they pollinate a whole area around you, about 5 kilometres.
5 kilometres?
Yeah.
Oh, so they do travel a fair bit.
They travel a long way for such a little insect, yeah.
Oh, isn't that interesting? So why keep bees in an urban environment? What's the benefits of it?
Some people really love the hobby of keeping bees. They're such a beautiful little creature to have in your garden, and it gives them, you know, something to do on the weekend, and with such a benefit of having honey as well, something you can put on the kitchen table, it's even better.
Hmm. Where can we keep bees? For example, can residents in high-rise urban buildings keep bees?
Yeah, I was really surprised because I come from a commercial beekeeping background where we keep them in the country. And when I first started doing this in the city, I was a bit worried about putting bees on high-rise buildings. Not sure if they're going to be able to forage, you know, from such a height. But I've been surprised that some of our most prolific areas in the city in regards to nectar flows are on high-rise buildings. If you're in a high-rise building, I guess one of the things to really consider is your strata. You know, a lot
right.
of people want to keep bees, but you've got a lot of people in that building with you. And so if you have a nice community and a nice committee, you can easily keep bees on a rooftop.
And I said, as you said, bees can forage up to 5 kilometres. We haven't got any buildings as tall as 5 kilometres yet, so
no.
they can get down to the trees.
I think the highest one we have in the city at the moment is on the 10th floor.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, right. Well,
yeah.
I guess in Sydney we're fairly blessed in that we do have gardens and botanical gardens.
That's
and,
right.
And that's thinking right in the heart of the city. But in the suburban areas, there's high rise, but there's still quite a lot of foliage, isn't there, and plants.
There is. We're really lucky in Sydney. There's lots of water gum and paper barks on the side of the road planted. Unfortunately, a lot of those are getting cut down at the moment. But if you do kind of become a beekeeper, you'll notice a lot of the floral environments on the side of the street, so you'll see paper bucks flowering and you'll know that your bees are going to be start producing honey pretty quickly.
Right, okay. And that brings me to the question, is the honey production, I'm moving down a bit here, but is the honey production seasonal or?
It is. In the coastal areas, I know that Manly always gets a winter harvest. I was shocked because I'd never really harvested honey in winter, and I went to go check on the beehives, you know, just a quick pop in June, and they were completely full. That happened 3 years in a row, so I now know that Manly is an area that produces a winter harvest. Most other areas, though, it will just be spring and summertime that you'll be harvesting honey.
It's fairly temperate at Manly, isn't it?
It is, and also on coastal areas you get a lot of Banksia, which can flower during the wintertime.
Right.
And, you know, even I think around Maroubra, Malabar, there's a lot of coastal kind of foliage there still, so you do get winter harvests around those areas.
Oh, that's really interesting that you know, how sometimes it's seasonal, a lot of times it's not. Who can keep bees? Is beekeeping a suitable hobby, for example, for, I don't know, people with disabilities and families with children?
Yeah, there's been a lot of new kind of beehives come into the market. One of them is called a top bar beehive, which means that you're not lifting the boxes on and off. You're pretty much just lifting the honey frames out, and it's kind of raised up. They're also called a Kenyan beehive, but mostly they're called top bars. And if you look them up on the internet, they're like a, instead of the beehive growing upwards vertically, it grows horizontally, and you can have it raised up so that you can actually, if you're in a wheelchair or with mobility issues, you don't need to bend over to do anything.
Right. And so if you didn't have a lot of strength in your arms, by example, you
That's
could still
right.
take out, what do you call them?
The honeycomb frames.
The honeycomb frames. Sounds wonderful. You can still take out the honeycomb frames. What about families with children?
Yeah, I always say it's up to the parents. Like, I mean, I've lived with my young nephew from the ages of 1 to 3, and we had bees, and that was wonderful. As long as, you know, you teach kids respect for the bees, you know, not to be picking them up when they're going out on the grass, to be wearing shoes, especially if you've got clover in the garden. Lots of people with children have bees, and we also encourage it because the kids can help. Like, they like to hold the smoker and do little chores as well. Get them in some protective gear, get them out there, and start to give them some respect for nature as well.
I think that'd be a wonderful experience for children, really.
Yeah.
Can you give us some examples? We were talking about high-rise buildings before having bees. Can you give us some examples of cities, apart from Sydney, which is embracing beekeeping, but that have embraced beekeeping in a reasonable way?
Well, in Australia, Melbourne is great. They've got the Melbourne City Rooftop Honey. That's a company that started around the same time as the Urban Beehive, and they've got bees in Federation Square and all around the city. Melbourne really embraced it, which was wonderful. I used to travel a lot, and when I first started travelling in New York, it was actually illegal to keep bees there. Because of the awareness around bees now and how they're under threat, they actually changed the law in New York, and beekeeping is a very, very popular pastime there.
Oh, that's interesting.
Paris.
And they'd be quite tall buildings, I would imagine.
Yeah, and it's a really built-up area. Like, you do have Central Park. I know that they are more aware about the flora not yielding enough nectar for the bees there.
Yes.
And especially with the hurricanes, like, I think it was Hurricane Sandy came through, a lot of beekeepers were worried. You know, we don't really have those problems here in Australia.
No.
Paris is beautiful for bees.
Is beautiful,
it
stop.
It is, I know.
At a bee, and it's perfect, I'm
But
sure.
they have them at the Opera House there.
All right.
Lots of different places. And if you get a good viewpoint of the city, as a beekeeper, you'll start to look at the rooftops, and you actually start to see beehives on those rooftops.
Is that
it's
right?
It's wonderful.
Yeah. Next time I go to Paris, I know what I'm going to be looking for.
Yeah.
That's not just the old masters. We'll have some wonderful new ones as well. So can you tell us, so there's got to be pros and cons of beekeeping. We're starting to talk lots of pros. What are the difficulties or the things we need to worry about in beekeeping?
I guess, you know, their greatest fear is getting stung. And I can understand that. As a beekeeper, I get stung, but I've been stung so many times, my body's kind of used to it. But I know that when people first start, they are worried about it. And like you mentioned before, small children, and people are also worried about their pets. If that is a concern for you, the actual bee sting, or if you've got a reaction like an anaphylactic reaction, you can always keep native bees. So native bees are stingless, Tetragonia, you get them in a small beehive, and they also don't take any maintenance. Some people don't have a lot of time. Like, I mean, bees, you're looking at about 15 minutes for an inspection every 3 weeks.
Right.
But when you're doing a honey harvest, it can take a good couple of hours.
Mm.
And some people think, oh, that's not a lot of time. But if you are time poor, it can, you know, it's something you can easily put off all the time, and maintaining your bees becomes a bit of a chore. Yeah. So I always recommend native bees for people who don't feel that they can keep European honeybees.
So you can source, native bees as well as...
Yes. There's a wonderful website called aussiebee.com.
Right.
AUSSIEBEE. And they have lots and lots of information about different native bees.
And what level of production of honey do native bees have?
See, that's one of the cons, is that you don't really get a lot of native bee honey. You might get a kilogram at the most compared to a European beehive where you get 50 kilograms on average. I noticed in the beautiful garden outside here that you had a little bee hotel somebody had made for the community garden.
Yes, there's I just need to add that there is a lovely community garden here at Glebe that's kept very well by the community. So that's the one you're referring to?
Yeah, I just walked past it and I was like, oh, and they're actually solitary bees, so they won't produce any honey whatsoever.
Right. Oh, that's interesting, isn't it? But, you know, if it is a real factor about being stung by a bee and perhaps an anaphylactic reaction, then the native bee sounds like a good way to go so that the children can learn or people can learn about keeping bees.
That's right.
Sounds very interesting. Of course, a wonderful benefit from keeping bees is the delicious product, honey.
Mm-hmm.
What are the health benefits of honey?
Oh, it's a great alternative to sugar. It also allows you to taste what's the flavour of your local area. Each suburb, right. Each tree produces a different flavour, and you can notice those changes over the season as well. Some people are trying to cut a lot of sugar out of their diet and would like to use an alternative for cooking as well. Honey is great for that. Honey is also good for just colds. I don't know, it's such a beautiful product. There's so many benefits to it. But it's just not honey that you get from the beehive, it's the beeswax.
Right.
And beeswax has a myriad of uses as well, like lip balms, cosmetics, furniture polish, candles, bee wraps. There's just so much things to
do. Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
And I've actually heard, I don't know whether you know about it, but about people actually rubbing honey on various wounds of different sorts.
Yeah, so that's mainly the Manuka honey.
Oh, right. Yeah.
All honey has antibacterial properties.
Right.
Honey never goes off for that reason. It's,
oh, is that right?
Yeah, it doesn't have an expiry date. It can last forever.
How interesting.
Manuka honey is unique in that it comes from the tea tree family, the Manuka family. Mm-hmm. And it's got antibacterial properties. I think they've tested it on staff, golden staff and things like that in hospitals. And it actually, it's got like a natural peroxide.
Oh, right.
Which works.
Peroxide.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. So because it comes from the tea tree family, it's kind of like a tea
right.
tree. It's not like tea tree oil, but it's got those similar properties to it. And it's really good for an open wound in dealing with the bacteria.
Oh, I'm learning so much. So, how do we get started? What do we need to know to establish a colony or apiary of bees? And then we'll look at where we can learn about beekeeping. But what do we need to know to establish a colony?
A lot of people really want to keep bees, but they actually haven't looked inside a beehive. I always recommend having a good look inside a beehive before you commit to keeping bees. A great way to do that is to visit your local bee club. If you look up Amateur Beekeepers Association New South Wales online, you will find that there's a Find Your Local branch.
So that's Amateur
Beekeepers Association. Mm-hmm. I call it the ABA,
right.
But everything else kind of comes up with the acronym as well.
Mm.
So, yeah, if you Google Amateur Beekeepers Association, there's a little link on that that says find a branch, and then you'll be able to see the local bee club to you. The majority of bee clubs have field days, which is where they've got an apiary that you can go and visit and they'll get you kitted up and you can open up a beehive and just see exactly what it's about. If you do that and you find that, you know, you're even more interested in keeping bees, I suggest doing a short course, reading lots of books and looking on YouTube and then assessing exactly where you want to put them. You know, you've got to really consider where you're going to put bees in your garden in regards to cars and clotheslines and all sorts of things.
Yes, I was wondering about the location. Do they need a shady area or does it matter?
Morning sun and afternoon shade is perfect.
Right.
But I would always say more sun than more shade. Mm. They really need the warmth to wake them up in the morning.
And do you need to keep out a small bowl of water or anything like that when it's very dry?
Yes, especially on a hot day. They drink about 2 litres of water.
Really?
Yeah, because they use it to cool down the beehive.
Right.
So you would put out like a kind of a bird bath type dish, I guess,
and
put some pebbles in there so that when they land, they've got something to land on. They don't drown.
Mm.
Some people just put a bucket of water out, but they can't actually drink from that because they get in and then they get stuck and they kind of drown. So they love little waterfalls or things with, you know, something to land on nice and soft with moss.
Right.
You really want to put an alternative water source out for them or else they end up going to pet bowls right. pools, that type of thing. So having a water source close by is great.
Right. Now, we haven't talked much about the queen. What the queen is necessary, I take
yes.
it?
Yes, she is a very, very important lady in the beehive. The beehive consists of one queen. On the rare instance, you might get two living together because the younger queen will allow the older queen to stay until she, you know, passes away. But pretty much 99% of the time you would have one queen in the beehive. You then have about 60,000 workers.
60,000. That's a lot of people to keep in the country. That's an army.
I know. And they're all girls. They're all female.
What?
And then you'll get about 2% of their population will be male. There will be the drones. And they don't really do much work. They're just kind of around to make
no comment.
Yeah. but yeah, no, that's pretty much what the beehive makes up. And the queen is the mother of all the bees. So she lays eggs. That's pretty much just her job, is that she just goes around and lays about 1,000 eggs a day.
Mm.
And the workers then do everything else. Mm. They do the nursing of the brood, the collecting of the pollen and the honey, and cleaning up and things like that.
So the bees actually consider the honey or the is it honey at that stage when it's
So honey is made. I get this question a lot. So pollen is what you see on the stamens of the flowers. It's kind of that flowery type consistency, and the bees collect that and put it on their legs. They're called like little floaties or pollen pants. You'll see them flying around with these big balls of pollen on their legs, and that's for the brood. That's what they feed to their baby bees.
Right.
Now the nectar that is collected from inside the flower is kind of like the treat that the flower gives to the bees in order to collect the pollen, because the pollen is what then allows pollination between trees in the flowers. The nectar is there to entice the bees to come in, and they drink that. They take it back to the beehive. They dehydrate it to about 18% moisture, and then that becomes honey.
Right. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
You're with your little companies known as the Urban Beehive.
That's right.
Does the Urban Beehive run courses for novices?
Yes, we do. We've got some really popular courses in Centennial Parklands. They run every fortnight during the spring and summertime. If you look up our website, The Urban Beehive, there is a courses link. They're on Sundays. It's usually between 9 and 4:30. And it's a full day, so we do theory. And also there's a large practical component. When I first learnt beekeeping, I just did a theory. And then when I went to go and open up a beehive, it was just completely shocking to me. It's like driving a car. You can read all about it. You can watch all the videos. But until you put the foot on the accelerator, you have no idea.
Where's the brake?
Exactly.
How do I get out of here?
So I always suggest to people, like, I mean, do come to our course if you can, but I always suggest to people, get a course that has a practical component.
Right.
It's really going to help you so much more as a beekeeper. After a course, you really want to have the confidence to be able to open up a beehive and not be scared and to know what you're doing. And, you know, because a lot of people, they get bees and then they're a bit overwhelmed and they just never inspect them.
Right.
And it's your legal obligation to inspect your bees for health and disease. So, you know, to have that confidence to be able to go in there and do it, it's really important.
All right, well, how can people get in touch with you? I think you gave us another website as well for amateur beekeeping and so forth, but how do we get in touch with you if people want to look you up and
great.
Inquire?
We've got a website, which is theurbanbeehive.com.au. You're always welcome to drop into the shop, which we've got in Matcherville. That's on Macaulay Street, and we're open Fridays and Saturdays. And I have a lot of people just drop in and want to talk about it. And then I can show them the beehives and the different suits and things like that. And I'm really happy, as long as, you know, like a business partner as well, he's happy to sit down and chat with people about keeping bees.
Well, there we go. And you've really you know, to gain my enthusiasm for. I'm lucky that I live on an acreage, so you know, sort of observe bees flitting around and doing their thing. And I must say I've never been bitten by, stung by a bee. I've been stung by a wasp several times, and I'd be much happier to be stung by a bee because at least I know it was productive. But I just want to say thank you so much, Vicky, for talking to us about bees. You obviously know a lot about bees, and you have your radiating knowledge to us in the studio here today. So I'll just say thank you very much for coming in, and I've really thoroughly enjoyed your having a chance to have a talk with you today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Fran. It's been a pleasure.
Wasn't that an informative interview with Vicky Brown? Well, that ends another thrilling episode of Animates. See you next time.